Ladies and gentlemen, later in this podcast, I will talk about the book covers which are currently viewable in a competition for the new cover of Underwood and Finch. So it might be an idea to pause this podcast now, follow the link in the show notes and keep the webpage open in a different window on your device, and then later on browse through the images with me while I talk about them and tell you what I think of them. Of course, you don't have to do this. You may have been there already, and when I describe them, you may remember them. But, you know, it's just a thought. And, of course, if you haven't been there and you haven't voted yet on which one you'd like to see win the competition, then you can vote when you go there, can't you? But now, over to me. Meanwhile, with me, Mike Bennett, the stuff I'm doing when I'm not doing this. Hello there, and welcome back to Meanwhile, the podcast in which I talk about the stuff that I'm doing when I'm not doing this. Now, I haven't done one of these podcasts for a month or so because, frankly, I haven't been doing much. Nothing's been going on in my life. You know, I had a cold, but you know about that. And that's about it, really. Hardly the contents of an interesting podcast, is it? No. But some stuff has actually been happening and is happening now. And so I thought I'd put a short episode together to fill you in on all of that. The first thing is, I built a greenhouse.
Ooh.
Of course I say built, but it would have been more accurate to say that I assembled a greenhouse. It came in a kit well over a year ago and was spread out all over the floor of my garage like a plane crash for what seemed like forever, and bits of it actually still are. Oh, God, that terrible moment when it arrived, and I realised that the lovely picture of the greenhouses that my wife and I were looking at online and rashly purchased was not the thing that we had actually bought. I thought we'd bought a greenhouse, but what we had, in fact, was packet upon packet of heavy glass panes, hundreds of nuts and bolts, and a metal frame in bits. And with it came the most indecipherable instruction manual in the history of indecipherable instruction manuals. You know how you get instruction manuals these days that just completely avoid language altogether because they're shipped all over the world? And so you have to figure out the whole thing from the drawings. Well, this was one of those. Not a word of English or any other language in it. And worse, instead of just being the instructions for my model, it managed to mash the instructions for all three models of the same greenhouse, you know, 4 foot by 4 foot, 4 foot by 6 foot, etc., etc., in together. And also maybe you chose toughened glass, or you chose perspex, or you chose sort of just bog standard glass. You know, they're all in the same flipping manual. Oh, it was a nightmare. I started putting it together last summer, and by the end of the autumn, due to hatred of the thing and procrastination, I only had the frame up. Then I gave up on it completely for the winter to begin a long, cold spell of dreading the time that I'd have to start again. Now, of course, some of you are probably thinking to yourselves, well, what did you expect to happen, you fool? Did you think that they were going to deliver a ready-assembled greenhouse and just plonk it down on the ground and say, there you go? Well, no, obviously. But, you know, to be honest, I don't think I really thought about it that much because I knew if I had done, then I wouldn't have bought it. Oh, yes, I knew that I'd have to assemble it because there didn't seem to be any alternative way of getting a greenhouse. So I just grasped the nettle, so to speak, and bought it. But then it arrived, the heavy pile of stuff waiting for me to assemble it. And I hate assembling things, especially things made of glass. Small 4x4 houses of glass. God, the horror. What was I going to do with it? I'm not a real man. I can't use a spanner. I am a spanner, according to the kids I went to school with when I was 11 or 12.
Bennett, you spanner!
Of course, we were all spanners. It was a much bandied about term of abuse in those days. But I digress. So, there I was, owner of a massive kit of misery with an incomprehensible set of instructions. So yes, it lay mostly in bits for most of last year. But this year, I was determined to get it up and get some tomatoes and cucumbers growing in it in time for the summer. And I did! Huzzah! I won't bore you with the details, but I will say that it was an ordeal, especially when I discovered that once I'd assembled it and screwed it all together, one side of the roof was mysteriously longer than the other side by about a centimetre. But fortunately, my neighbour has a machine called a grinder. He's a real man, you know. He has a workshop and tools and everything. He came round and he shortened the long bits and helped me out with some custom-built glass-holding clips when the ones in the kit didn't fit. Oh, imagine how that felt when I discovered that the clips in the kit didn't fit. Terrible, terrible. But anyway, really then, my neighbour is the hero of the whole project, and I'm just the guy who persevered bloody-mindedly with it until it was finally done, which, as I say, it finally has been. So, huzzah again.
Huzzah!
And actually, my tomato plants also say huzzah. I have about four of them now, plus a few more that I'm growing from seed. I also have some cucumber plants, and they're growing very nicely. And on a good day, the greenhouse gets up to about 80 degrees Fahrenheit in there, and you know, the plants, they love it. Oh, yes. I guess later on in the summer it's going to get a lot hotter than that, but, you know, I can open the window, which also didn't fit until my neighbour cut the panes of glass to size. He has a glass cutter and everything. I was so impressed. Needless to say, he won't want for tomatoes or cucumbers this summer. Assuming, of course, that I don't manage to kill all the plants, which could happen. What else? Ah, my dog, Pippa. Oh, my God, she's in heat. Despite the fact that the place we adopted her from assured us, both verbally and in writing, that she had been spayed. Well, I wasn't too happy with that, as you can imagine. But they were very apologetic. They said that the previous owner had told them that she had been spayed. And yes, of course, you would think that they themselves would have actually checked that little fact. But, you know, what's the point in giving them a hard time? They're a charity, they do a really good job, and they offered to pay, you know, for the spaying in order to make up for it. But, you know, I declined because, as I say, they're a charity and I didn't want to take money from them. And of course, you know, they made it possible for us to have our wonderful little woofer. So, you know, I couldn't be cross with them for long. But oh my, phew, this heat business. I've never had a female dog before. And when she started, you know, bleeding and not being able to pee properly, we thought that maybe she had a urinary infection. Because, of course, we believed that she had been spayed. But we took her to the vets and he prescribed a treatment of drugs. Again, because we told him that she had been spayed. He did have a look underneath her and was puzzled that there was no obvious scarring. But, you know, like us, he kind of erred on the side that it was an infection. And so there we go. He did a urine analysis and from that was able to determine that she, A, didn't have a urinary infection, and B, that she hadn't been spayed. Now, all of this wouldn't have been so bad. You know, we could have just waited until her period of being in heat was over and then, you know, got her spayed and we'd be all done, no big deal. But unfortunately, it's not that simple, because there's another actor in this drama, and his name is Ollie. A small, wire-haired terrier mix breed who's very much got all his bits intact and is wildly in love with Pippa. I mean, normally he is, you know, not just now, but now he's really, absolutely bonkers for her. The problem is that his owner, who's an old guy and he lives somewhere near here, but, you know, I don't know where, lets him roam around all day and night as much as he likes. I guess he only goes home to get fed and sleep. And he isn't doing much of the latter lately because he's always outside our front door every night barking to be let in so he can do the deed with Pippa. And this is the really bad thing. I have to chase him away. I have to be mean to him, shouting and shooing him, chasing him off with a big angry face. And he's such a cute little thing. And all he wants is a shag, bless him. And she wants it too. She mopes around the place, wanting him, probably hating me for chasing him away and putting up barricades around the walls to keep him from getting into the back garden. You know, he jumps onto the wall and he manages to get past almost anything in his path in order to get to her. I have all kinds of tin can alarms strung up on the walls and across paths so I know when he gets in. Because, you know, anytime she's out in the garden, you know, they're quiet about it. They keep a lid on their passion so you don't know what's going on until you see a flurry of fur in the corner of your eye. And there she is, lying down so he can get his tiny front legs up on her haunches. And then I'm up, running over, arms waving and yelling like a madman. Ollie, get off, get off! And he looks up at me with his happy little face, and I try to lead him away, but he grabs my arm and switches his affections to me, humping at me until I can get him up by the scruff of the neck and over the wall again. And then he'll come right back, and I have to go through it all again, which he loves, of course, like it's a big game, which it probably is, to him anyway. Great fun, he thinks. Any hour of the day or night, too. The swine. Oh, and so, yes, I have to be mean to him, chase him off with an angry face and a shouty voice, and his little face is all forlorn. But, you know, better than puppies, isn't it? If she only had one, you know, I think we could probably deal with it. But, you know, a litter? No, thank you. Anyway, it's nearly over. Hopefully just another week or so to go. But it's been a very long month, I can tell you. OK, last thing. And now we come to the thing that I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. And that's the new book cover design for Underwood and Flinch that I've been banging on about on social media, and as I'm sure that you may have seen, here on Patreon too. So what's it all about, and why am I doing it? Well, it's all about audience, my dudes. My audience, both in podcasting and definitely in book sales, has been static for a very long time. In fact, in book sales, that static figure is almost zero. My books don't sell. Why? Well, I guess because the marketplace is absolutely flooded, for one thing. Same as the podcasting market, actually, but much worse. I just can't get my book seen on Amazon for love nor money. An ant waving at a passing car has got more chance of being seen than my books do on the Amazon bookstore. So, what can I do about it? Well, there are a few things, I think. And first and foremost is to change the artwork. The existing artwork, which I really like, by the way, has been in place since 2012. So, for one thing, it is time for a change. But also, I have to wonder whether the artwork itself is drawing any fresh eyes to the books. Are fans of vampire fiction, horror fiction, paranormal fiction, etc., being lured in by the cover of the first volume in the Underwood and Flinch Chronicles, Resurrection? As you may know, it has a picture of a watch on it. Stylishly and tastefully done, yes. But is it drawing anyone new? I can't say. There's no way of telling. Yes, the watch image is both iconic and familiar to those who are already familiar with the story. But to new eyes? It's a watch. Then there's the second volume, Bonded in Blood. It has a pirate flag. Again, very stylishly and tastefully done, and both representative and iconic of the story. Familiar to those already familiar with the story, but to new eyes, is it a pirate story? What is it? Maybe pirate fans click on it, but when they see that it isn't actually a pirate story, they leave. And as for vampire fans, well, they see a pirate flag, so they probably ignore it. These people don't want stories about watches and pirates. They want vampire stories. So, what I'm thinking is, I need a cover that appeals to those eyes and hopefully, you know, drive some new sales and grow my audience. The other thing I can do is to end the whole two-volume ebook thing. This came about when I first started doing ebooks due to the way things were at the time, you know, in the sort of wisdom of Amazon marketing. But now I think things have probably changed. When I first started ebooking, the wisdom was that having a series was a really good thing. Readers apparently love multiple book series, especially in the fantasy and paranormal fiction genre. The opinion was at the time also that the ideal price for an ebook by an unknown author was $2.99. That isn't really very much when you consider just how big Underwood and Flinch is. Do you know that when I first started writing One Among the Sleepless back in 2001, the accepted kind of minimum word count of a novel was 75,000 words. But when the whole ebook revolution began, that word count figure dropped to 40,000 words. Some pulp fiction authors on Kindle were knocking out books left, right and centre with 40,000 words or less, and all with a $2.99 price tag or less. Now, Underwood and Flinch has a word count of around 247,000 words. So, you know, by comparison, it's pretty huge. I wasn't going to sell my book at $2.99 when everyone else is off selling 40,000 word books at that price. Oh, no. So I decided I'd split it in two. Not only would I then get a fair price for my book, but I'd also have the start of a series. And indeed, I could sell the first part for less than $2.99 as a loss leader and still come out with a better deal. Good idea. Maybe. Because then came the problem of Blood and Smoke. The second podcast, but the third ebook? Oh, that doesn't make sense. It was and is confusing. So much so that I've never actually released the ebook version of the book for fear of confusing podcast listeners and ebook readers alike. But that is all finally about to come to an end. For the first time, I'm going to put those two volumes of Underwood and Flinch back into one big novel version and sell it at the $2.99 price tag. And then I'm also going to release Blood and Smoke, finally, as the sequel, Underwood and Flinch 2, in step with the podcast. So finally, at last, there will be harmony between the ebooks and the podcast, and indeed, perhaps one day, on Audible too. And of course, these books are going to need new covers. But what will those covers be? What will they depict? Well, for my part, and call me stupid if you will, but I think they should be something that people who love horror stories, vampire stories, supernatural thrillers, etc., would be drawn to like a moth to a flame. So the cover, I think, should fit existing norms of book cover design within the genre, or genres. If you go to Amazon and search under vampire fiction and whatnot, do you know what you get? You get exactly what the responses from many of you over at the design polls say not to do. I'm talking about covers that depict the heads of stock models. Now, I know, because I listened to your comments at the poll, that you hate these kind of covers. You say they look like Harlequin romance novels, they look like Twilight or the Vampire Diaries and stuff like that. But you know what? Love it or hate it, that stuff is the kind of stuff that's getting the click-throughs, the Twilighty things, the Vampire Diary things. Because consciously or unconsciously, people are looking for codes, signs in the artwork that tell them that this book is the same kind of book as the books that they like, the books they're looking for. And that is why I've included the covers with the stock model heads in the selection that you've been looking at. And interestingly, the one that most people seem to dislike the most is the one that's got an absolutely beautiful, fiery depiction of the town of Olvera, or Almacena, as we all better know it, on the cover. Do I like it? Yes, I do. Do I like the models? No, I don't. But I do know that what I want and what a certain demographic of Kindle readers want aren't the same thing. So yes, I do like it. Is it my favourite? No, I don't have a favourite, and that is why I asked you to take a look and vote on which ones you like, and don't like even. Now, ultimately, I may not accept the majority decision in this poll, but I do think it's helpful to get a sounding board of what you all think. So, as I mentioned earlier on, if you have that website window open in your phone or whatever, let's take a look at the images now, and I'll tell you what I think of them. So, currently at the top, we have The Leader of the Pack by a long way, and that's image 61, which we can call the wolf design. As of now, it has a 4.1 rating, 249 votes, and 129 of those, 5-star. You seem to love it. And I agree, it is striking. I like the fonts, it's clean, it's modern, and cool. But the main focus here is on the wolf's head. And Underwood and Flinch isn't a book about a wolf. In the story, the wolf doesn't even appear until the final stages, so it's a little misleading. Now, I've had a chat with the designer, however, and he's going to come up with an alternative based on the same idea. This time, we're going to have a man's face, but it's going to be blurred, indistinct, so you can't see his features. You see, I've taken note about your comments on faces. The wolf's head will be moved to where the bat's head currently is, and the bat head will go completely, because we already have a bat's wing on the image. I personally can't wait to see it, but it's not there yet, so watch this space. Then below that we have image 55, Fanged Mouth and Church. Now I like this, I think it's well composed, it screams horror, vampire title, and it has the church in Olvera taking up the other half of the cover. So that's good. My only concern with this one is that it suggests a savagery and violence that the book, of course, lacks. I think this cover might put a lot of people off, and those that it might attract could be very disappointed with what they find inside. Next is image 6. Let's call it Cape Across the Face Man. Again, I like it. We have nice colours. The Underwood & Finch logo is reminiscent of the one we already have. And we can see a man's face there, but we can't see it clearly. So we have no one telling us what the guy looks like. And also, it clearly suggests vampire. Now, I've asked the designer to make my name a little bigger and to put it in a more interesting font. I think this one could be a winner. Below that, then, we have image 57, the one with the kind of the man's face in a sort of a red stripe in the middle, and either side we have a man and a woman and a watch in the centre. I like it. All the text needs to be clearer, you know, the title and my name, which actually could be a lot clearer. Of the three faces we have here, I kind of like the way that Underwood isn't really visible. The David guy is quite good, but, you know, Lydia, what is going on with her? Look closely. Why does she look undead? And what the hell is going on with her hand? Look at that. She has gargoyle fingers. That's not a good look. I think this one needs a little work. Next one is image 60. It has a 2.1 rating, 189 votes, 3 of them 5 star. Now this one, I must be honest, I don't like it. That is not Underwood. It's a model that comes up if you search on the word vampire at Shutterstock. I think this guy looks like a bit of a knob, to be honest. So this one is not going to win. Then we have image 43, pretty boy with trickle of blood at the corner of the mouth. It is striking, it says vampire, but that's all it says. And Underwood is a bit older than this chap, so I'm not sure about this one. And finally, at the bottom, the current turkey of the bunch is image 78. It has a 2 rating, 194 votes, 12 of them 5 star, and 101 of them a mere 1 star. Without doubt, most of you hate it. Exterminate! But me, I like it. Not the models, no, they suck, no pun intended, but they definitely tick that box I was talking about earlier. The idea that maybe some Kindle readers are looking for certain codes. It sort of says, hey, if you like that vampire horror book, why not look at this book? And there's something about these three people that makes you wonder who they are. What's their relationship? You know, why is that guy looking anxious? This guy's clearly the vampire. And who's that woman? Are they fighting over her? What's going on? Would you like to know more? Click through and find out. Because relationships, which the people potentially suggest, are a very key thing with Underwood & Finch, because this is a book where the relationship between the characters, however badly it's depicted here, is central. Yes, you know, there's the naff trickle of blood from the corner of the mouth, but, you know, we could lose that. Indeed, we can lose that guy completely, or any of them completely, and replace them with someone else. But, you know, saying that, finding the right people on photo stock images, you know, people who look like the characters in Underwood & Finch, is not easy. In fact, it's nigh on impossible. Not only can you not find people that look like them facially, but it's also very difficult to find people who are wearing the right clothes, striking the right kind of poses, the right kind of facial expressions. It's very difficult. So I think, you know, there's going to have to be some compromise if we go this route. But then, you know, that top half aside, down in the lower half of the cover, we have what I think is the best thing about this image, and that's the shot of the town. Which, of course, I know will not be obvious when you look at this in miniature, when you're looking at it, you know, on Amazon. But nevertheless, I do like it because that's the town where the story is set, and it's the town where I personally used to live. Is it tainting my view? Maybe. But, you know, there it is. And indeed, there they are. the covers that we have so far for your consideration. As I say, I haven't decided yet, and there will be an extended period of a few days on this competition where we will get to see some of the changes that the designers make to their images to incorporate what I've suggested to them. Those changes suggested by your comments on the page and my own personal views. Maybe we'll even get some new images too. Indeed, maybe you think that you can do better yourself. If so, then join up at 99designs.com and submit your entry when the competition reopens in a few days. Who knows? You could win. If not this particular design competition, there may be another. Why, you could even start making money as an online designer. A whole career change lies ahead thanks to this podcast. Well, it's all part of the service. But anyway, that's all for this episode of Meanwhile, my friends. The next time we speak via this podcast, I'm pretty sure that Underwood & Finch will have a new cover. And love it or hate it, don't despair. It's not going to be forever. When the movie comes out one day, why, it'll have a whole new look all over again. But with actors' faces. Oh dear. But anyway, from me for now, my friends, until we meet again, thank you for listening, pip pip, and cheerio. Just a quick update, ladies and gentlemen, if you are interested in going into that design competition on 99designs.com, you need to do it now, because the competition is in fact now reopened and will be for a couple more days. Thank you, and good luck. Oh, and the music you're listening to is by Andrew Rothman. For more information, go to arothman.com.